Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands, a podcast about the martial arts with a focus on Kenpo. As always, I am Reggie Darden, and I have another wonderful guest with me today. I will probably have to fix this editing already because I realized I just didn't do what I supposed to do before I start, but need to make sure that I get the correct pronunciation of your name. So could give that to me here. And
Frank Vigoro.
Thanks. Frank Vigoro. Okay. All right. Right on. Right on. All right. So, yeah, I'm excited to have you on, and we're going to hear your story of how Kenpo found you and how martial arts found you. And we'll just kind of go from there. I usually start things off with just giving a bit of my background. I started in Kenpo in the 90s, and have since trained in a number of other martial arts: Taekwondo, Hapkido, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Muay Thai, Capoeira.
Yes.
Oh wow! I don't think I missed any this time. I did some boxing. I've been keeping pretty busy. So
that's awesome.
That's kind of a little bit of my background, and we may get into more of that as we go along. But going to go ahead and turn it over to you. Let us know how Kenpo found you, or if you have done any other martial arts, how they found you as well.
Wonderful. Reggie, thank you so much for having me here. This is a beautiful platform to actually get to know many martial artists. I see great people already seeing you podcast, so I'm so blessed and honored to be on your show as well. My name is Fran Vigoro. I'm original from Chile. I born in a very south city town in Patagonia, in the very south of South America, which is actually, it's funny because when I tell people, especially here in New York, New Jersey area, when it's cold, when people ask me if it's my first time to be in the cold and the snow, I'm like, no, actually, I born in a very cold city, which is the sidekick of Alaska, and the weather is very extreme. We don't have a long summer, actually it's a month if we're lucky there. It's very extreme and very cold. And I moved here to United States in 1990, 91, late 90. In pursuit of my Kenpo training, actually it was the idea to, from the very beginning, to see more Kenpo and have the opportunity to train with other people, other martial artists, and especially Kenpo. And that's one of the things that when I moved to New York, actually from a very small town in Chile, I moved to New York. And in New York City, I always said you can find anything but Kenpo. So it was very hard to find out looking for a Kenpo academy. So my first year, you know, as an immigrant, so I was looking and try to find my way and find my call, which is actually, it's one of the hardest things for any human being to see exactly why you are good to be in life. And I guess martial art found me. Not even mentioned before I start in mid-80s, pretty much, I started in Kenpo. Kenpo was my first style. I always mention the Japanese karate, but not quite because I start with Kenpo. The thing is, back then in 60s, 70s, and 80s, Kenpo was not quite what we see today. American Kenpo was more like a karate, Japanese karate. So many of the instructors and practitioners back then came from the martial art, a traditional martial art, especially either kung fu or karate, like in my case. That's one of the reasons why we still call sensei our teacher, and we're still using a lot of the terminology, Japanese terminology. And so when I moved here, I was pursuing with Kenpo. I moved here as a first degree black belt. I was 20, 21 years old. I was very young, trying to look for a life and try to look at my way. And I went to school in Chile and together I did a karate. Karate was just a hobby. It was my goal back then as a young practitioner, I guess. Not exactly what I was ended up as a karate instructor at the end of my days here. I started in, like I said, mid-80s. Karate was sort of different. Mr. Parker, Planet Seed in South America, especially when Chile was the first country where American Kenpo was introduced. In Latin America, we are very lucky and blessed to have the opportunity in the hand of Mr. Arturo Petit, which was one of the pioneers in karate and in American Kenpo, especially. So obviously, for many reasons, Kenpo wasn't like I teach today or what we see today. It was more a mix of many other things plus few things for Kenpo. So it wasn't quite like the system or the method that we have today. But even though it was very tough, I mean, back then, keep in mind, we have idols like Bruce Lee and then Karate Kid, the original Karate Kid. It came in the movies, Jean-Claude Van Damme. So we got all that influence of martial art. And because we don't have a much technology that we see today, terminology and method and things like that. So what we used to do, the training was very hard, very intense, super old school. One of the things, for example, I see when I teach my classes, I put music. I like teaching with music in the background. And that's something that never happened in my studio. I give it the chance to my student go to the bathroom when they need it and get water. It was no, and back in my days, it was very strict with those type of protocols. And in the workout was, I was said, physical training, like workout was pretty much like 40 minutes. Sometimes we just take the whole class just doing condition, and then the last 20 minutes it was quite karate, so it was pretty intense, a lot of fight. I never got the opportunity to train or fight with equipment. I learned something in the United States, the type of karate coming from, it was bare knuckles. And it's funny because back then in Chile they call light contact. It's not light at all. Is the rule, the regulation we used to use in the 80s was Kyokushin Kai Karate, Masoyama style. So it was a bare knuckles. The punches, it wasn't a lot on the face, but it was a good amount of brutality. So it was brutal training and very intense and very physical. By the way, in 1990, before I moved to the States, I was a national champion. And I was in full contact, it was like that, but it was Kyokushin Kai Karate rules, bare knuckles, and I was a national champion. So there are few calls there that I kind of like give me some reason to pursue in my trainings when I came here. And like I said, I came to New York. It was not what I was expecting, big city. New York City back in the 90s is not even close to what you see today. Back then it was kind of like dirty city. Now it's beautiful. I mean, you go to Times Square and you go around, it's very safe and very clean and beautiful. It's made for the tourists. Back then it was a little bit rough, so it was a different year. And so I looking my way around and try to, number one, survive, looking for job and looking for opportunities. And the first opportunity that I had was training Taekwondo because I was searching for camp. I couldn't find him. So I met someone in Taekwondo, Henry Chow, Taekwondo. So I did for quite some time. And finally, I met someone there who told me about this campus school in Midtown Manhattan. So I went to this studio. It was running by this gentleman, Jack Chamberger. amazing martial artist, great Kenpo is. He makes Tracy's Kenpo and some of the style, very intense, very tough training. The good thing, I came from a tough school, so the transition wasn't bad at all. The only thing, I didn't speak the language, so there was creating a barrier there because I couldn't communicate it with people. And everything started this way. After training for quite some time there in the studio, a few months actually, Mr. Jack Chamber came at the office and I said, oh my God, maybe I did something wrong. So the guy came in the office and he called someone else, a Spanish guy, and he asked to translate it for me. So this guy said, I need to talk to Francisco here because I want to say something to him. And I was looking like, oh gosh, what I did now. Mm-hmm. He goes, tell him that I want him to be my instructor in the studio. And the guy was looking at him like, I mean, he's new in the studio. He goes, just tell him. I think he got talent to teach. Anyway, when he told me that, I was like, oh my God, I couldn't believe it. So he gave me the opportunity. And this is funny. I always tell the same story because it's actually true. And it's give me, I feel so blessed by the Lord, how the opportunity sometimes knock you down. And this is funny because Jack Chamber gave me wins. Actually, there's something that I always remember and I always tell my story here. Back in the time, you know, New York City, it was a very adult type of environment. There was no kids. I don't remember seeing any kids in the studio. It was all adults, every class. So he got a very popular classes, Wednesdays and Fridays. That was the most popular class, packed classes. For some reason, then the guy who was teaching on Wednesday moved from the state and they left Friday class, which was successful, huge class. Everybody used to go training there. It was a huge class from 6 to 8:30, hour and a half class, 2 hours. I remember one day Jack told me, okay, so Frank, take Wednesday class. All right. So I remember the first day I went to teach the Wednesday class. And guess what? It was me and myself there waiting for students. So, all right, the time go by. And one day I was in the studio by myself waiting for students. And this gentleman came with very suit up, Wall Street looking guy, white guy, blonde hair, and he asked for information. I was like, oh my God, how can I explain this guy? You know, I couldn't even say hello to him. So I tried to, you know, speak in my broken English back then about the classes and give the information about the schedule and prices and everything. And I had such a hard time to try to explain myself. And the guy said to me, hey, listen, I'm Puerto Rican, man. Don't worry about it. We can speak Spanish. I'm, oh my God. Okay. So guess what? He was my first student, Jeff. Hopefully, Jeff is somewhere in the world. Great guy, great person. Actually, I met the family later on and wonderful people. He was my student. So guess what? he used to come every Wednesday. And the class was so fun. People love my classes, and especially him, actually. And it was so fun that some people from Friday came to check it out class on Wednesday. All right. So and then a few weeks, I got 2 students, 3 students, 4 students, 5, 10 students now, 15 students now. Over 20, 30 students in my class. They closed down the class on Friday. And guess what? I was the most famous instructor in Jack Chambers' studio. And that made me think a lot. God blessed me with the opportunity. And it was a lot of hard work. So much to improve myself every time. But at the end, worth it. God gave me that strength. And a wonderful blessing. To fund my way in karate. And after that, the next year, I won the New York State championship. I won in form. I won the overall. So after that, this is a blessing. So guess what? A few years, I opened a studio. I moved to New Jersey. I opened a studio with two partners. We did a new project there with a mix of Kung Fu. One of my students actually was my student that he was a Kenpo, but he was a Hunger Kung Fu practitioner. And we opened the studio in Jersey City, New Jersey. Actually, it was not far from the city. And from there, everything changed my story because we was together for 3 years. And then we split, not for any bad reason. It was the time to keep finding my way. So finally, after 6 years, I went back to Chile for the first time. And when I went there, I realized that people really want to learn more Kenpo. And that's when I said, you know, I want to come back to the state. I want to pursue it deeper in my art. And a year later, I left my partners. Wonderful guys. I mean, they give me the opportunity. What a great people. I love them. Actually, one of them live around in my area here. Amazing guy. And they gave me the opportunity to start. And 1997, I opened my first Kenpo, official Kenpo studio here in New Jersey, in North Jersey. And we called Vigorox Kenpo Karate Studio. 2 years later, I called Vigorox Kenpo Karate Studios. And later on, we opened Vigorous Kenpo Karate Studios International when become actually almost like an association franchise type of business model. And we're here. I mean, it's what a blessing how sometimes there's certain things in life knock your door. Sometimes you're looking for and things happen. When it's something for you, it's for you no matter what. And I gotta always set in my process and grow as a man, as a martial artist, that it will be impossible with God's blessings and God in my life. And I'm a Christian. I always mention about God because I'm being in a situation where the only person, the only father that was there with me was God. And I give him my time, honor the Lord for everything I do. Without God, I mean, this would be impossible. It would be impossible. I mean, Reggie, I went through so many things. And imagine now, grow as a man. When you're 20 years old, you're still a baby. You're a boy. You're a little boy in 20s. Especially men, we get older in the 40s, 30s, 40s. And when you're 20, you have no sense of life, sense of nothing. And I can hear without family, without any relative, nothing. The only thing I know are some friends, but it's not the same. They're not family. So God put me in a situation where with his hands, it would be impossible to survive. And I always honor Lord for everything I do because I was in a very dangerous position sometimes in my life. And the hand of the Lord said, and usually, you know, when I always tell these stories, I can't stop to say about God because he actually gave me the strength and gave me the reason. And I guess God chose martial arts as my way, and I will never gonna stop to say how much I love God. And this is weird because sometimes you expecting go to church, sometimes somebody talk about God or Jesus or whatever, or something more religious or more spiritual. You're not expecting a karate scenario in a karate seminar, or karate class. And guess what? People come to see my Kenpo, but they take my Kenpo and God at the same time. So that is the time to God is doing a ministry here and use me to give it a hope for people. There's so many people that are looking for martial art as many reasons. It's not 100% of people who are looking for martial art, looking for learn how to defend themselves. a lot of them looking for philosophy, for life, for discipline, but a lot of people looking because the envy and the heart. A lot of people looking for the reason and take martial art because they might think they're going to find something spiritual. But sometimes it's, most of the time, martial art is kind of empty in that regard. And when you got the training, physical training, and you got the word of the Lord, you feel you glass. You feel with positive things in your life. I think martial art is the way it should change people's life in a positive way.
No, I like it. I like the story. I like that, or I should say, that's one of the reasons why I always say that martial arts chooses you versus you choosing martial arts, in that we get put into these situations where, you know, we end up in a school or with a teacher or something that really shapes our lives and affects our lives. And it's not just about, oh, well, this school is close to me, or you know, this particular system is just what somebody's teaching. Like, you get into this spot where it just really things just connect. You get these students, or you get connected with these teachers where everything just kind of works out the way that they should, or the best way that they should. And sometimes we have these feelings of, oh, well, I wish that my school was bigger, or I had more students or whatever. And maybe at that particular time, you know, when, especially for those that have started teaching at younger ages, you know, when you're 25 or something like that, that maybe is not the time for you to have 400 students. But once you have had more experience teaching, more experience living, then that if it's the destiny, if it's in the stars, whatever, for you to be that, then things get put into place for that to happen, and we get these things when we're ready for it. So yeah, I like how your journey kind of says that in you know being at the right place at the right time for that, and you know, your success just speaks to how those things fall in where they need to. So I wanted to kind of get a little bit of clarity on a couple of points. One, going back to when you originally started. So a lot of people get into martial arts because they were bullied, or in kind of my case, I was just always a fan of the martial arts. So for you, when you, the, you know, your very first day of starting, what was the catalyst for wanting to be involved in the martial arts? Hold on, I think I lost your audio here. Hold on. Can you still hear me okay?
Yep, you hear me now?
Okay, there you are. Okay.
All right. Anyway, there you go.
Okay, there we go.
Like I said, that's the answer. I mean, that's the question that people always ask, how we all start. And In my case, actually, it was martial art for me. It was a lot. I mean, as a martial artist, true martial artists, we're not the one that we decide overnight, oh, we're going to try martial art. I want to try martial art. People like us is the kind that it's a call inside you. I don't know. Some people believe in other life. I don't, but I respect that. But I think it's something inside us who tell us where to go. In my case, I was maybe 6 years old, and I went to my friend's house. And I still remember when I walk in the house, I saw this beautiful, huge picture. It was like a panoramic type of picture with a bunch of martial artists sitting there with their white uniforms. And that really, I was 6 years old, that really caught my attention. And I mean, I guess in that day I said, I wanna be like that. I wanna do that. And guess what? I'm here. So when I have the opportunity to training, I remember I was around 14, something like that, 13, 14 years old. And I saw a flyer in my small town, a karate flyer. I went to see that school. And after school, I went with one of my friends, and I saw this. It was a kempo. I didn't know about any styles or any difference between any type of martial arts. So I went there. I didn't have the money, but I asked for information. This lady, very nice lady, gave me the information, gave me the prices, the schedule and everything. And I went home. My mother wasn't there because my mother was visiting my father. My father was in the Navy for almost 40 years, and my mother was visiting my father. He was in different city. And my sister was taking care of us, my older sister. And I told my sister, listen, I want to look in karate, but I need the money. And she was, no, mommy's not here. She won't let you. I said, please. And she goes, you know what? I got money that mommy gave me, but I promise, we're going to use it for the food. I said, please, could you lend me the money? Lend me the money. Anyway, first story, she lent me the money. Next day, I signed up in karate, and look where I am now. Mm-hmm. I always tell my sister, he said, you are the one who made me do this. And it was a wonderful time. Like I said, I have great memories in this old school, very traditional type of karate, very strong sensei. Almost sometime my sensei was a Cobra Kai, the back Cobra Kai. That was my sensei, yeah. But it was a great guy. I love him. He gave me a good sense of a true martial art life, and my recognition to my first sensei, Juan Jaimes, who really making before and after in my life, absolutely. And then when I moved to the United States, I tried different people, but the one who changed the vision I got today in Kempo is when I met Larry Tatum in California. 1997 changed my perspective. I said, I wanna be like him. I wanna do that. And I training, I always said people, I used to have my studio here in New Jersey. Because we opened in 97, actually the same year that I met Mr. Tatum. And I used to travel back and forth training with Tatum, training in Pasadena. And I was talking with Cliff and Juan Serrano, which actually was my Kemper brother from Brooklyn. Actually, he moved later on. He moved to California. And I tell them, every time I used to go training with you guys, you were so good. I couldn't even get you guys. It was extremely extraordinary martial artists. So, and it was a number of a lot of training, a lot of frustration back and forth. When I think I was ready to come back to California, guess what? I wasn't. So it took me a long time to realize and get the system and the training and Tatum mythology, and I was so blessed again to find him, and he became my mentor in Kempo. He's one of the reason why my Kempo looks like the way it is today, and they influenced Tatum not for myself, for many people around the world. It's been huge. And so I trained with him. I get my honored my four. I was 4-degree black belt when I met Tatum, and then he honored my four. I was testing a year from there to my fifth, six, seven, eight, and after 10 years, being eighth, I was testing last year for my 9th degree. So it's been a long journey. It's been a process where you grow as a person, as a human being, but also as a Kenpoist. And in the way I see Kenpo, the way I understand this art, it's allowed me to have more tolerance with the Kenpo community, to understand other Kenpo lineage and influences, definitely. Because at the end of the day, everybody has something important to say about Kenpo. And I disagree when people criticize the art. I think Kenpo is so beautiful. You can see from different perspectives. And I think everybody has something right, very important to say about Kenpo. And when I heard, you know, and see people from different lineage, which is not my lineage, but a true respect, and I see, and it's a value. It's a value, yes. And we all learn from each other at the end of the day. I learned a lot when I heard people talk more concept about Kenpo, other people that are more physical about Kenpo, other people going more in the more embryonic stage of Kenpo, and other people take Kenpo more tactical. Other people, they proclaim the original Kenpo, whatever it is. I think we got some value in something to rescue, and I learned from everything. And I think we are beautiful and huge community that, you know, I accept in everyone. I think at the end of the day, everybody has something important to say. As long we don't criticize, as long we don't come in with negative energy, I think everything I'll take everything. I think everything is about it at the end of the day. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's so many parts to Kenpo, and there's so many different bits, principles and theories and techniques that not one of us can have it all. So being open to all the different perspectives and ideas and just views is I think important for the growth of not only Kenpo, but of us individually being able to take in all of these different ideas and perspectives is important, and not interested in doing all of the fighting and the politics and all of that. We should be interested in growing the art, growing in the art, and being able to spread that to all those. So
absolutely. Yeah,
all for that. So I wanted to touch on the teaching side of it. When were you always interested in getting into the teaching part of it, or did you kind of fall into it?
Good question. Yeah. I mean, one of the things, if you want to, I mean, in the very beginning, obviously, you want to training, you want to, you know, early and in many type of martial art, you want to compete, you want to, you know, you want to be good in this, and you're not looking for teaching. But later on, as you grow, as you process and digest information, you feel like it's kind of like the time to share. And especially when you open your karate school, in my case, my Kenpo studio, a desire of share my progression and my understanding and my development in the art, I think it made me be the teacher who I am right now. And start very humble, and, you know, creating students and taking through curriculum. I mean, thank God in Kenpo, we had a wonderful system of very well organized when it's coming teaching. The bell system in Kenpo is very well designed to take the student and progress in the student. And got a specific curriculum and assignment for every bell. So I think that is something that it's such a plus. And a very competitive martial art business. And Kenpo offer a very good amount of material in a very well designed case of study. And that really helped to teach to be an instructor. Now, in my first years, my first students was very physical. And what I see today, what I teach today, it's I guess it's more intellectual. After years, obviously, it's part of the process. You grow, and or you get more mature. And there are in the way I teach today, definitely it's more complete. I got a very well defined methodology in the way I teach. I dissect my methodology with the system, because there are two things happen here, and that it's my my point of view of the art. It's one of the system that many people know, the American Kenpo system, which is starting with, you know, a number of material, self-defense techniques, freestyles, form sets, basics, and so forth. That's one part of the system, which is actually that is the requirements. But now the thing is, how are you going to administrate in that system with a very effective method? And that's where, as a teacher, be teaching for many years, I quite see more. That's my, once again, this is my point of view. I know I understand other teachers, they got their own system and their own way and their own methodology. But in my case, it's important to define what is American Kenpo. I think that's one of the first thing to understand. Because you, Kenpo, you can take from various perspectives. You could be more like a Kung Fu, more Krav Maga tactical, could be more Japanese style, could be even more island type of martial art, like a Filipino, Silat. So, you know, sometimes Kenpo could turn in a lot of other things. And in my opinion, I think sometimes we move a little bit off from the system when we misunderstanding the definition of what American Kenpo is. And this art, obviously, it got Japanese and Chinese rules, especially more Japanese. But at the end of the day, was created here in America. So obviously, it's a Western martial art. And for that reason, I think it needs to be more clear the method that actually be adapting to the system. And when what we understand for what American Kenpo is, in my opinion, is a rapid fire, multiple directional strikes, and multiple dimensional targets. In other words, when Kenpo, we're poking the eye, we're breaking the arm, we're kicking in the groin, and we crossing and pushing and breaking your opponent's balance. So you do like a three or four things or five things at once. I mean, American Kenpo is a multitask type of martial art. There are many things happen at once. Because many things happen at once, you need a very specific type of method that help to develop in a very well-designed system this art. And in my opinion, I think it's when we define what American Kenpo is, the teaching process, the development process, and to success as students, it's much easier. It's much easier, especially when we have an amazing system. In my case, the method is very simple. It's very simple. One, you block and you kick. The first technique, the lace sword. You say, oh, but it is a lot for the student. Well, guess what? When the student comes for the first time, they don't know anything. So you better teach something more effective and more creating the base, the foundation for what's coming later on. And that is something that American Kenpo is famous for. It's a rapid fire action. And something that I teach here, my students, and that I become my passion now teaching, because you can see the evolution, how your student evolve from be very awkward, very uncoordinate, and turning something totally opposite. So it's wonderful. That is when my passion of as a teacher is coming. I love to practice the art. I love to share the art, but I love to teach. I think that it's such a plus and be as a martial artist, we can be able to share. And when you see your student progressing, and not just the adult, the little guys, and you see, you know, 6 years old and then turning teenager. Actually, it's funny because I got a generation of my student. I got one of my first students was 9 years old when I met her. He's 40-something today. He's a correctional officer. Now his son's coming to karate with me. So you see two generations, and it's wonderful because you be able to change people's life in a positive way. And also, I can explore my art. I can grow as a person. I can grow as an instructor and find it, grow as a campus. And that's pretty much my experience in when it's coming to teaching. I think at Ultimate in Kenpo, we got good tools, great system, very well designed system. When you see the system, you can create immediately a good method that actually synchronizes with that system. And there, I mean, the value to be an instructor is so rewarding. The reward every time is see how your student grow, they learn, they're progressing, they become somebody positive in the life. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. I see a few of them, they're lawyers, cops, we got doctors, and we got regular people, because ultimate, it's not what you do in life. Most important is how life make you happy. I think that's the final ingredient. If you're happy in your life, that's it. You don't need nothing else to be complete as a person. I think that's ultimately is the reason why we live here in the earth planet, to be happy and to be connected with the Lord. I think that's the most important. But when you help people to find their way, it's phenomenal. It's phenomenal. Yeah.
Very nice. Very nice. I like it. So I would like to ask this of my guests, since I train in multiple arts, I'm curious, do you do any cross training in other arts, or is it just all Kenpo all the time? Or
I my Kenpo, my first Kenpo, it wasn't quite Kenpo like today. It was more karate. Obviously, over the year, my sensei did the transition to American Kenpo, but it was very traditional karate. It was, you know, so I always said coming from Japanese karate, but not quite, because it was Kenpo more like karate. That's the truth. And when I came here to New York, I did Taekwondo for quite some time, and Kenpo will be pretty much all my life. I've been Kenpo. I mean, I recognize others' great systems and martial artists in general, like, you know, jiu-jitsu, kung fu. You know, my ex-partner was a hunger kung fu, so I got an opportunity to train a little bit. But Kenpo was always my thing. And I feel like, everybody got a different opinion about it. But in my case, I feel like you need to be good in something and concentrate all your effort in one. And that's what I've been doing all this year, American Kenpo. So if it's somebody who teaches today Kenpo and be all his life in Kenpo, that person is me. I'm being always in Kenpo. And I feel proud. I be taking classes. I did a little bit jiu-jitsu, but, you know, classes. I can't say, oh, I did jiu-jitsu or Krav Maga. I bump into friends, you know, here and there, one or two classes, but I cannot said I, you know, I don't have any certification in any other art. American Kempo is the one who I've been an expert, and take all my energy toward.
Very nice. I like it. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So before we get to our lightning round here, I've got another question for you. So with the kind of changes in society and media and things like that, and the popularity of MMA and the I guess things like Cobra Kai and stuff, I feel that we're kind of getting away from still haven't quite thought of the right term I want to use for this, but I say that we're kind of getting away from the kind of the Mr. Miyagi way of the martial arts, and now it's the martial arts is just kind of become this sport or this, you know, thing like WWE wrestling, and it's all about the glitz and the glam and things like that. And so I'm just kind of curious what your thoughts are on what you see for the future of Kenpo. What kind of things would you like to see happen with Kenpo, or what are things that maybe we used to do in our training that we don't do anymore that maybe you'd like to see come back, and just kind of what are your feelings on where Kenpo is going?
Wow, good question to finish. Absolutely. Gosh, it's hard for somebody like me who are looking more sure in a very cool, in a very technical aspect. I like clean technique, very well defined type of martial art, you know, with, you know, very, you know, good function, good technique, you know, that's the type of martial art I like, you know. Not necessarily had to be Kenpo every time, but I like, you know, very, you know, when I see sometimes Aikido with, you know, the lash and every very very technical. I love that. I think that two the three ways, I always said this is a three way to coexist in the martial art. One is well, I guess the four. One is like the typical very individual, you know, you want to learn martial art and you do martial art and you combine everything. That's the typical, very plain and very organic type of martial artist. The other martial artist, and actually that's the one always be, is the student of martial art and go different arts, but always the student learning, learning. That's one. The other one person that coexists in martial art is the sport karate type of practitioner. They don't see martial art beside from the sport perspective. And those type of martial artists, they perceive, they understand karate or martial art as a sport, as a tournament, and as a competition, which I respect and I agree, but I respect. And then you see the other martial artists who are the one they keep, how can I say this? They preserve and keep perpetual the art. It doesn't matter if it's Kenpo, karate, kung fu, whatever, but they always keep in preserve the art, and they make sure to keep the and keep in shape in a very strict alignment the art. And you see when, you know, either Aikido, Jiu-Jitsu, and people that stay with the art and they take in the art and preserve that, you know, regardless if they're taken to the next level. But always, you know, you see nothing but the art. So you're not going to see your, in other words, you're not going to go to a Jiu-Jitsu, a traditional Jiu-Jitsu, and do the boxing, for example. You know, they do Jiu-Jitsu or Aikido guy who's doing something else. They preserve the art. Those type of martial, actually, I'm one of them. And then the other one, it's the promoters, the coexist in the martial. And thanks for those promoters because they help to have more event, to have a more venue where we can chair and stuff. But they always that they're that kind of martial artist. They don't do more martial arts. They're sitting more in the office, which is, I'm not saying bad or, it's bad or it's good, but that's the one that coexists because that really helped us once again to promote the martial arts. Now, when it's coming to sport part, like MMA or any other, my only criticism is it's missing the discipline and values. That's the only thing I will say. It's become more Hollywood, more violent. The message that we're giving to the new generation, it's a little bit off what this true martial art is. That's the only part that I'm not agreeing. I think it should be show more respect, the discipline, the loyalty and values. I think there's something that's missing in that scene. It's good, very physical, very tough, super strong, very competitive, which is okay. I respect. It's not my type, but I respect. One thing that I don't think it's quite right, it's the part when it show the face, very off face of what true martial art is. I think it's missing the discipline. I think it's missing the value, the true value, what is martial. It's a little bit missing in the regard. That's the only thing that I won't say criticize, but I think I'm not agree. That's the part that I don't like it. That's the only. The competitive, don't get me wrong. I mean, those guys are super in shape, very intense. I mean, very strong. Obviously, you can tell they're not going to be forever the way they look today. I mean, you turn in 30 and that's it. I mean, as a sportman in martial art, you are very limited. And that's why I think it's very important to express more the discipline, the martial art, and that's missing in UFC, for example, or in MMA or in the cage. I think that part is a little bit missing. The message is a little bit wrong, especially when I got my daughter. I know that many of my martial artist friends, they got kids and they're raising family. So obviously, we want to bring a good message to new generations. And that's the only thing I would say, that it should be a little bit different. It should be more, if they're martial artists at the set, it should be empower that part as well and show that part. Now, when it's coming to competition, hey, I have nothing to say. Well, trainer, I mean, the way that today martial art is, it's the same type of evolution we see it in the boxing. I mean, the 20, the bunch was like this. And then you see more technical, very well physical condition, well prepared. And you can see the science into the sport. And I see an MMA as well, and UFC, very professional when it's coming to that. Those guys eat well, you can tell. They got professional people that help them. And, I mean, I have nothing to say with that. That's unbelievable. I mean, the way today, it's that business, it's very professional running. Missing the martial art part. That's the only thing I would say. Yeah.
I like it. I like it. Very nice. Very mm-hmm. nice. All right. So we are going to move into our lightning round here. Just got a few little questions for you as we head towards our close here. So first mm-hmm. question being, do you have a favorite technique?
Well, in Kempo, I got so many. But usually my favorite technique is that combine the opposite reverse, like fatal deviation in Kempo, for example. I like defensive cross. I like those type of form, that technique that you work offside, up and downs, and combine everything at once. It's when American Kempo really it's shine, when it's very dynamical way and very intense in the way we execute. And I love those type of fatal deviation, for example, one of my favorites, as many other. I mean, in forms in Kempo. Speaking in Kempo, I think a long form six, it's a beautiful form, but long six actually is beautiful, but long form four, I think it's my opinion, is the main forearm in the system. It's described how American Kenpo works. I mean, you poking, you kicking, you blocking, you checking, all at the same time. It's a beautiful form. Yep, absolutely.
Very nice. So you actually jumped into to the second question, which was, do you have a favorite form and or set? So you already covered
set,
that.
I think it's beautiful. Finger set is beautiful.
Oh, yes.
Stand nice. Set, great. Yeah, I love those. Yeah, they're beautiful. It's a lot of art. It's sometimes, this is it's me. Because everybody say, oh, Frank looks like Darren Salsa. Yeah, because Kenpo is actually, it's in a good expression of your body. And when you cannot talk and not explain, you need your body short. So sometimes the signs, you can explain everything through signs and Kenpo. But sometimes when the sign cannot explain, that's when the art take over. And obviously we can, because we don't have, ultimately we don't have rules in Kenpo. It's principle motion. So you always can alter, modify, change, and express your way because it's not truly a rule. If I teach a number of rules in the art, I will limit it. That if I show you and I teach you principle motion, you can adapt it. And that's a difference. I mean, we don't have a, people said the rules of Kenpo. Be careful with that because if I show you a number of rules, you're never going to be able to break it. If you break it, then that means you do wrong. So when you got signs with principle of motion and then you can adapt them, you can extend the elongating the lines of the circle and you can actually learn how to use it in your own benefit. And that's what the form does. So that's the only time I can express it myself. I can express the science with art. It's beautiful. Fingers are too, it's a wonderful stance too. I love when it's the art parts that can take in place in the art. Absolute income.
I like it. I like it. All right. Next question. Do you have a favorite weapon?
I think it, I love the Kali stick. It's a versatile weapon. You can turn in a very, you can stab in, you can poke in, you can whip in, you can strike in, you can block in, you can create a manipulation. It's an amazing weapon. Obviously in Kenpo, we encourage to work three weapons, which is the long staff. We got staff set, the Kali sticks, the Kenpo sticks and the knife. I love the knife. And but I think the sticks is, in my opinion, is more functional. I think it's very versatile. You can do so many things where, yeah, absolutely.
Nice.
If I have to take the one, it will be the Kenpo sticks. Yes.
Excellent.
And actually, I got mine here.
Oh, those are nice. Those are very nice.
There you go.
Excellent. Excellent. Yes. All right. Next question. There's anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, besides Ed Parker, who would you train with?
Oh my God. It's people always ask me, you're gonna leave Tatum? Well, if he died, which is the process of life. We're all gonna die at one point. I'm with the best teacher in the world, in my opinion, in Kenpo. I'm very blessed, so I don't need anybody else. And I don't say it as an arrogant word in a very humble way. I'm very fortunate and very blessed to have Mr. Tatum as my mentor and my teacher. But the other one I wish to train it with is Mr. Paul Mills. I think he taught Kenpo in a very interesting turn in level. It's very interesting, Kenpo too. That's my type, Tatum Mills. I think Paul Mills did a phenomenal work with his art. Unfortunately, he passed away, I think, last year. And that was a person I wish to train it with. But like I said, my teacher right now and for the past 30, almost 30 years now, has been Mr. Tatum, and I'm very blessing to have him. Absolutely.
Very nice. I like it. I like it. Mm-hmm. All right. So the final question, and I'm still kind of workshopping this one, but I'm curious as to something that motivates you and inspires you to train. So to give you an example, for me, the movie Rocky IV, there's the part of the movie where he's training for the big fight, and the music's playing, and he's chopping the wood and running through the snow and mm-hmm. lifting the rocks and mm-hmm. all these things like that. And I've seen the movie so many times that there's not a number high enough to count as many times as I've seen it. But every time I see that scene, I'm fired up. I'm ready to go train. I want to go.
Yes.
Go hit something. So I'm curious, what is something like that for you? And it can be anything: a movie, a song, a book, a person. Just what is something that motivates you to train?
Wow, you know, you nailed that, because I feel like Rocky is one of the type of movie that you see evolution in an individual and in training and in system and method. I mean, you see Rocky I, you know, he was super amateur. I mean, he was like Mr. Nobody. He didn't have skill, but he has something that sometimes people in these days need. He got a huge heart. Mm-hmm. And that's why he won at the end, because he got the heart. He encouraged himself to win. You know, that is what a mentality. But then later on, you see the transformation from being Mr. Nobody, super amateur, not clear, well-defined method, super old type of training, and then become different body, all well-defined and so far, different training, foot maneuver from Apollo Chris and all that. So it's a beautiful evolution. And that's what pretty much happened. So Rocky, yes, one of my, yes, top. Another one is in the philosophy that I always, when it's coming to movie, I think The Last Samurai, I think beautiful message. I mean, number one, the discipline. Talking about the tradition, talking about the call in life. When the guy passed away, he said, tell me about this guy. Tell me how this guy passed, how he died. And I will tell you, but I'll tell you how he lived. And wow, what a message. And I think that at the end of the day, it says so much about us, what we do in our life, where we want to be. You want to live here, money for your next generation, or you want to leave a true legacy, a true inspiration for people that come in after you. In my case, I think it's, I try to do the right thing, and I try to be things with honesty. I think that's, and regardless, it doesn't matter if it's a martial art or whatever, like, my focus in life is just be a better person. And like we always heard somewhere in the social media, the best version of me. That's what I want. I want to leave something that people said, I want to walk there. I don't want to be like this guy, but I want to walk in that direction. Hopefully I can make a road for people that are coming after me. I don't want people to be like me, but at least people can walk the same way I walk. Walk through there. And I think that is important. So Rocky and Last Samurai, both amazing philosophy of life. Never give up, but also watch what you do with your life, because always people's watching. I think that's very important. And to me, that's what I look in my life. with a lot of mistakes. Hey, don't get me wrong. So many mistakes. So many things that I want to come back again and take the time back and fix it when you can. But now I got the opportunity to fix it now. And my, hopefully my 10, 20, 15, or 1 year, I hope I can fix everything that I made wrong in the past. We still got time. That's the blessing of the Lord. We always got the time. Every day is a new blessing. Every day is a new opportunity so we can change things and start to make it better for tomorrow. The future doesn't exist. The past, there's nothing you can do about it. But you got a gift, the present we can do today.
Exactly.
Such a wonderful time, Reggie. I got to be very honest to you. It's such a pleasure to share my heart, my life, a need of Emily, for many friends, many people that they follow me, other people they love me, and other people that hate me, regardless. It's a little piece of me. I can change it. This is what it is. And hopefully this one day my daughter can see it. Reggie, thank you so much for this time.
Oh, thank you. So, we've got one last thing here, and then we'll close out here. So, now is your time for a shameless self promotion. So you can plug anything you like, or if there's anything that we didn't cover that you wanted to make sure that we get out today, you have the floor and say whatever you'd like, and then we'll close out.
Yeah, I mean, once again, Reggie, this platform is phenomenal. I mean, the podcast that you're doing, it's show the real person who we are behind the belts and the uniform. So, again, thank you for the opportunity. And the only thing I can say, I mean, I'm not pushing anybody, you know, to be a Christian or whatever. I mean, that's not my job. It's here my honest expression of myself when I say about God and things like that and Jesus, because I feel it in my heart. And I'm trying to be honest in what I do and who I am. I can hide myself. So if you live to have a message for somebody, it's be yourself, be honest. Put yourself together. One of the things I love about America, I love this country. This is my 34th year here in the United States. I got an American daughter who born here, so I feel so proud of this wonderful country. The country gave me the opportunity to be who I am. And something that America can provide is equal opportunity. If you are for the job, you got the job. That's it. So I, for the new generation, working hard, don't give up in your dreams. Don't leave others to criticize. If you strongly believe what you're doing is the right thing, go for it. With double energy and make it every time better and better and better. So the opportunity is here. And regardless of the country, by the way, it's about you. It's about the human being. It's about the person. If you're a true believer, you convince yourself, you got a strong commitment with yourself, the opportunity will come. And I'm alive and proof that. I came with nothing, no skill, nothing, and God gave me the opportunity. And people really believe in myself. So there's something I got to leave for people. It's be honest, working hard. Prepare yourself. I mean, this life, looking for people who are prepared for something. Regardless, you want to be a sweeper and the cleaning lady, be the best. That's all. Be the best. That's all. So prepare yourself, study, training, and be honest at the end of the day.
I like it. I like it. Yeah. Thank you so much for taking the time to share your story. And I'm inspired by your journey and I certainly hope that we can do this again a little later down the road and get into some more items. But I just can't thank you enough for being on and taking the time to share your story. And I can't wait to get this out for everyone to hear. So thank you again.
That was wonderful. Thank you, Reggie. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure and honor, honestly. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkenpo.com. Thank you.